This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
In the summer of 2007, you could hear the thud of scientists' jaws dropping all over the world as they watched the Arctic sea ice almost vanish. It was a world wake-up call on global warming. This year, as we languished in the media tsunami of the American election, there has been another great turning point. It's like a climate change siren blaring from the dark Arctic sea, and we are just too far away to hear it. But know it or not, we will suffer the consequences. Here to explain is one of our favorite climate scientists and Arctic watcher, Paul Beckwith. Paul has two master's degrees. He's working on his PhD on extreme climate change. He teaches at the University of Ottawa in Canada, and he educates us all with his YouTube videos. Paul Beckwith, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Hello, Alex.
Well, you know, talking with you, Paul, it's kind of like visiting the emergency room doctor. It's not because we're doing great. This time we've got a broken Arctic. What's the big deal there?
Well, I guess the point is that all of the data from the Arctic is unprecedented. You know, at the risk of being attacked by Washington Post for saying unprecedented, as I was on the jet streams, like, there's no other way to describe it. The temperatures are off the chart, 20 degrees Celsius temperature anomaly, so that's 20 degrees Celsius warmer than normal, which is 36 degrees Fahrenheit for our American listeners. As a result, the ice is not forming properly, where the sea ice minimum occurred on September 8th or 9th, which is surprised a lot of people because people expected with the rates of decline that it would be maybe a week or two later. You know, even normally it's about mid-September. And as the ice is trying to grow in extent now, as we move through end of November into through winter, then the ice tries to grow, but the water surrounding the ice is very, very warm, much warmer than normal, and that's just melting it back. And also there's tremendous amounts of the thickest ice in the Arctic, which is bunched up just north of the Canadian archipelago, which is being exported by the wind patterns through the Fram Strait between Greenland and Svalbard. And this ice is going into the open Atlantic Ocean and completely being melted out extremely fast there. So we're also having a lot of ice that has moved between the islands and the Canadian archipelago, and that's also melting. You know, this is happening on a continuous basis. There will be a lot of variation, but, you know, we set the second lowest record with the September minimum ice extent, and now we've been setting records for as low as ice this time of year. And it's because the Arctic temperatures, they're 2 months behind in terms of cooling down. I mean, we're basically seeing temperatures in the Arctic now that we should be seeing in September.
All right. Now, just to be clear, was the Arctic sea ice at an all-time record low this summer of 2016?
This summer, it was the second lowest. It was behind the previous record of 2012, and it was very close but slightly lower than the previous record of 2007 that you talked about in the introduction.
But now the problem is it should be forming and hardening up and getting ready for another season, and it's just not doing it the way it's supposed to.
Yes, that's correct. As it attempts to grow, which it does every year, we have very good satellite data from 1979 onward, and you can compare the curves of all of the years, and we're well below where we would be expected to be this year. Not only that, the sea ice in Antarctica is dropping off of a cliff, and it's much lower than we've ever seen it there. So when you look at the total global sea ice on the planet, then because of the rapid drop in Antarctica and because of the record lows in the Arctic, they add to something which is completely off the charts. I mean, it's just, this is a measure of how quickly our planet is warming from all of the feedbacks that are in play.
Well, that's one of the things the doubters tend to say. They say, well, maybe it's shrinking in the Arctic, but the Antarctic sea ice is expanding, so the poles are just balancing out. Who cares? But they're behind the times now. That isn't what's happening, as you've just said.
Yeah, it's just the most striking plot is actually, if you look at the graph of global sea ice, which is Arctic plus Antarctic, and it's because we're setting records at both poles, the combination is the most striking. Yeah, I mean, our climate system is changing in ways that were, are they unexpected? Well, with these type of temperatures, you expect the ice to melt much faster. But, you know, these type of temperatures that we're seeing at the poles are way off the scale. In fact, if you compare this year's temperature to pre-industrial, you know, we're well over that 1.2, 1.3 degrees. There were entire months, for example, the entire month of February was almost up to that 2 degrees above the pre-industrial 1750 sort of values, because from 1750 to sort of the 1880 to 1910 average, there was about a 0.3 degrees Celsius rise. From the 1880 to 1910 average to the 1950s to 80 average, say, there was another 0.3 roughly, and then you need to add the 1.25 that everybody's talking about, but that's relative to, you know, the 1950 to 81 averages roughly. So then you get a total of 1.95 degrees for February 2016 over the 1750 value. So we're talking about Paris levels, that 2-degree limit in Paris, you know, well above the 1.5 degrees. I mean, that's just for 1 month, granted, but, you know, when the tally comes in for 2016 overall, you know, we're going to be way off of the charts. And, you know, also we will be for CO2 rise as well. I mean, the CO2, which is very worrying because the global sinks of carbon dioxide, namely the oceans and the soils and the vegetation, the trees and so on, are failing. And as a result, the International Energy Agency numbers, which are showing supposedly that human emissions have stabilized, you know, are expected to be similar in 2016 to 2015, which was not much higher than 2014 or 2013. So kind of flattening off, and yet we're setting, in 2015, the CO2 rose a record 3.05 parts per million. And this year, I wouldn't be surprised if it's between 4 and 5 parts per million rise. So this is a very rapid acceleration, and it must indicate that the global sinks are reducing. The oceans are warmer, more stratified, so they're not absorbing as much of the CO2. We're getting tremendous fires in the boreal forests and also destruction of the Amazon rainforests, and so we're losing the sinks, the carbon dioxide sinks on the planet. So it's getting out of control. I mean, we need to declare a global climate change emergency.
All right. Well, you are like visiting the emergency room doctor. So before we get to some of your solutions, I do want to get back to the Arctic science. And even before we do that, though, I think people need to realize that these changes in the sea ice, even in the fall, could affect us right here where most of us live, in North America, in Europe, in Russia. How does that work?
Yes. Well, the Arctic is getting darker because we're getting a rapid decline of sea ice, which is a white surface that reflects a lot of incoming sunlight during the summers in the Arctic. And as bad as the sea ice decline is, the snow cover over the land in the spring is declining at about double the rate that the sea ice is declining. And Greenland is melting a lot more, and we're getting lakes forming on the surface, which are dark surfaces on top of the white ice. And as the ice melts back, it's uncovering a lot of the dust and dirt and stuff that's embedded in the ice. So the whole Arctic region is darkening, and it used to reflect about, on average, about 52% of the incoming solar radiation. And now, according to NASA, it's as of a few years ago even, it was reflecting only 48% of the incoming light. So that additional 4% of light is being absorbed by the surface, leading to additional heating in the Arctic, which is causing the Arctic temperatures to rise much larger than the global average, and certainly much larger than the equator temperature, because the equator temperature doesn't change too much. When there's more heat at the equator, there's more evaporation of water, which doesn't raise the temperature. So that kind of moderates and keeps the equator temperature is somewhat stable. You know, if you live in a city on the equator, your yearly average temperature might only vary about 2 or 3 degrees. So what this means is that the temperature difference from the equator to the Arctic is getting much, much smaller as the Arctic is warming. And it's this temperature difference that determines the jet streams, how they form at the altitude that planes fly. And it also affects how wavy they are, how fast they are. So they're slowing down because the temperature difference is reduced and they're becoming wavier and getting stuck. And this is causing the increase in extreme weather events that we're seeing. So we're seeing a higher frequency of torrential rains, for example, much more severe extreme weather, and also the duration is, these events are lasting longer. So we're getting many cities flooded out because their infrastructure just cannot handle 3, 4, 5 months of rain in a night or two, which is happening commonly at cities. So we're changing basically the heat balance on the planet. Heat moves from hot areas, the equator, to the poles, and it does it about a third of the heat's transported in the ocean currents, two-thirds in the atmosphere. And because the poles are so much warmer, there's less heat transfer, so the current ocean currents are changing, the atmospheric currents, namely the jet streams, are changing. So there's more heat moving to the southern hemisphere as a result, and that heat is changing. It's also causing extreme weather events in the southern hemisphere. So it's a global issue, and things are changing so fast. I mean, the flora and fauna, plants and animals, are stressed, and they're migrating quickly. And we're getting human migration as well, which is leading to nationalism and popularism and things like Brexit and Trump.
Well, I think you were the one who coined the phrase, what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. And for those paying attention, it's been brutally cold in Eastern Europe and even worse in Russia and Central Siberia, and they expect cold winters. There have been hundreds of record low temperatures. They've had to close schools. The daytime temperature failed to reach minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 34 C. Japan just had their first November snow in 54 years. It almost looks like what should have been the polar cold has slipped down into the Asian continent. Could that be related to changes in the Arctic or the unpredictability you've been talking about?
Yes. Coincidentally, just in the last half hour, I've been reading some papers from Nature magazine, the latest issue, and there's one particular one about how the polar vortex has shifted over towards Asia and Europe in the last 30 years. And they correlate it to the declining sea ice, but it's not just, the sea ice is not declining uniformly in all regions of the Arctic. So if you look at the Barents Sea, which is, and the Kara Sea, which are just off Russia, those regions have lost most of their sea ice for long periods of the year. That's where the ice has decreased more than any other region. So what this does is this adds a lot of water vapor to the atmosphere over that region. That water vapor ends up going over Russia and over parts of Europe, and it drops down on the land as snowfall. So those areas are getting more snowfall. And as a result, the polar vortex has shifted over where it used to be centered right over the sort of the Arctic Ocean region, more or less centered over, you know, the geometrical center of the planet. And because of the changing ice distribution, it's shifted over, and we're getting, as a result, we're getting this massive cold weather over Siberia and parts of Europe with all the snowfall that you just mentioned. And what we're also getting is the whole polar vortex, which is generally the winds, the high altitude winds in the stratosphere over the Arctic, those are actually often being split into two different cold regions, one over the Arctic and one over Asia and Europe. And the split generally occurs right above the Barents and Kara Seas, where the water is exposed, the ice is gone, so those areas are heating up, and that comes up, and that can split the vortex into two chunks. And that seems to have happened recently, with the chunk over the Arctic almost dissipating, whereas the one over Asia is much colder and more intense. You have to remember that there's a certain amount of heat on the planet, and that heat, even though there's rapid changes occurring, that amount of heat can't change too quickly. So if the Arctic is crazy warm, where did that cold go? It's got to be somewhere. I mean, it's, you know, over, we're very quickly losing it on the planet, but, you know, you don't lose it in a season. So it's actually been shifting over to Asia and Europe.
You've just taught me something obvious that I didn't really know. You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm your downer host, Alex Smith. My guest is Canadian climate scientist Paul Beckwith from the University of Ottawa. Paul, you recently released a couple of really helpful videos full of graphics on YouTube about this Arctic sea ice problem in November. You talked about wave action. It seemed a little technical, but what should the average person understand about waves and sea ice?
Well, I guess the important thing is that we're changing the physical nature of all the processes that are occurring in the Arctic. So when the sea ice covers ocean water, then as the sea ice thickness increases, then it's a very good insulator of heat. So it keeps the water temperature underneath separated from the air temperature. So basically, when the Arctic is covered with sea ice, it acts more as a continent than as an ocean, in terms of it can get very cold, the air is very dry. So as we lose more and more sea ice, we're turning the Arctic Ocean into a maritime climate. And the feedbacks are extremely strong, because the energy that does come into the Arctic from the sun in the summer, normally a lot of it is used up in melting the sea ice. But when the ice is a lot thinner and not covering as much area or extent, then that energy, it can take out the sea ice quickly, and then it heats up the water to extremely high temperatures. And then the water, because of wave action, there's vertical mixing in the water, so that heat gets transferred down. So you get maybe all the way down to the seafloor if you're on over a continental shelf, like the Eastern Siberian Shelf or the Kara Shelf or the Barents Shelf, like just near the coastlines of Russia. So the water can warm all the way down, and then it's that heat can be transferred through the ocean sediment and start thawing out the methane class rates that are there. And then we start getting more methane coming up, and we're seeing this in the Arctic region. And there's all of these different effects that are happening there, which are rapidly changing the planet. Now, Antarctica is a bit more of a mystery, because generally the sea ice there has been growing at about 1.5% per decade over the last few decades in terms of the seasonal extent. And just 2 years ago in 2014, we had a record amount of sea ice around Antarctica that season. It was a very unusual event. It was like less than 1 in 100 year event, I would say. You know, if you look at the statistics, it was well outside 2 standard deviations. And if that means anything to people, it was very unusual. And then this year, it's a record low, and it's plummeting down. So I covered all of these things with some nice graphics and things. They're on my website, paulbeckwith.net. And I did 3 videos, which I titled Our Climate Emergency and Three-Legged Barstool Survival, I called it. You know, a solution is what I'm really looking at. But, you know, the system is becoming very strange, so I threw in the word survival. And those videos, if you just Google YouTube, Paul Beckwith, you can find these videos. And I'm going to be doing quite a few more on how that's affecting the methane in the Arctic, and among other topics. I mean, I've done well over 100 videos now to try to educate the public about, you know, the risks that we face from climate change. And I've been trying to build the case that, you know, we're in a climate change emergency. The ridges of the jet streams run right up to the North Pole caused, you know, heating there in the middle of winter. The troughs run right down to the equator, and I argue they cross the equator, joining up with the southern hemisphere jet stream. So we're basically losing seasonality in the northern hemisphere very rapidly. And even the jet stream, the way they operate and the way they carry heat is another enormous feedback to warm the entire northern hemisphere.
Now, you know Dr. Peter Wadhams. He's one of the world's most experienced Arctic scientists. He's the head of the Polar Ocean Physics Group at Cambridge. He's a veteran of many expeditions to measure the ice, and he's released a new book this year, A Farewell to Ice. Have you spoken to Peter about the failure of this ice formation this fall?
Peter has been at Marrakesh at the COP22 climate conference, I believe under the invitation of Stuart Scott, who you've had on your program before. You've also had Peter. And Stuart did a whole bunch of press conferences at the COP, including on things like, you know, the impact of meat on climate change. He had a whole session on population. So he tried to hit the big elephants in the room that people don't want to discuss. And he had an entire two press conferences, I believe, Peter, maybe three, but one of them was specifically on the book, on Peter's book, A Farewell to Ice, and another one was on, you know, what's happening right now in the climate system. So I believe those videos, those sessions are all recorded. I believe those videos could probably be found if you go to the websites on the conference, but I know that Stuart will be editing them and posting them all on his YouTube channels, and I'll make sure they send you all the links so you can post some of them so the listeners can see them easily.
Yeah, Stuart sent me an email just yesterday. He just met the Pope, for one thing, briefly, but he met him. And he put a couple of links to some of those videos from Marrakesh, Morocco. But as you say, most of them are still awaiting editing. I'll put the links as they come up in my show blog at ecoshock.info. But please do keep me posted as well. Now, what else have I got here for you? Yeah, we're getting close to out of time, but I did want to get your reaction to Donald Trump. Kevin Anderson, when I spoke to him, worried that another 4 years of lies or delay and more coal could be the very critical 4 years we had to save the climate. Do you think the Donald will doom us, Paul?
Well, so, you know, there's a lot of people that are talking like that, and people talking about it's going to be too late, right, is often said. And I did a whole YouTube video on, you know, what does really too late mean? Because it's already too late for millions of people on our planet. Like if you're living in Bangladesh near sea level, you know, the rise is going to displace you. It's just a matter of time, whether it be 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, you know, 20 years, whatever. You know, is it too late for, you know, us in, say, Canada? There's such an imbalance between the effects of climate change depending on where people live and depending on the wealth of countries. If you're in a country where people spend a third or a half of their income on food, then those people are going to be basically unable to purchase food in a short number of years when abrupt climate change continues to accelerate and severely damages the food supply. I was just at a talk last week by an emeritus professor with Department of Fisheries and Oceans talking about fish farming and the decline of fish in the oceans. He also talked a bit more generally about food, and in the Nature paper that was talking about the polar vortex shifting, there's an article with about 30 different author names, and it's all about decline of yields of grains with temperature. And I skimmed the abstract, and it was pointing out about a 4 to 6% decline in grain yields globally with a 1 degree rise in temperature. Now, that I'm sure it's not taking into account things like the declining sea ice and feedbacks that are kicking in, and it's certainly not taking into account the rises in temperature that we've seen this year in 2016 and the rises in CO2, et cetera, things like that. So whatever Trump does, there's going to be huge impacts. And I think Trump, you know, he says he's a smart businessman. If he's a smart businessman, he'll recognize that gutting the EPA and gutting NASA and climate change research will put the U.S. into a huge recession, and it will basically, you know, have an enormous impact on reducing their technology, their ability to supply the military with advanced weapons. I mean, it will basically crater the economy of the U.S., which will perhaps reduce emissions more than, say, you know, somebody who's experienced and doesn't do these policies, you know, on the top of their head. The big concern is it takes decades to build up an organization like NOAA, for example, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, and these centers of excellence that do tremendous work with the satellites. And it takes decades. And if these can be killed with the stroke of a pen on inauguration day, I mean, we're never going to have a chance against climate change. Other countries in Europe, say, get more populist. Ironically, we're getting more migration around the planet because of the impacts of climate change. So to deny that that's causing it is going to make it worse, and the there's going to be way more migration, and it's going to just set us into a really, really dire global situation. So we need rationality in the decisions that we make, and I do propose that, you know, a three-pronged approach to slash fossil fuel emissions, to apply carbon dioxide removal, remove CO2. We need to get the levels back down to 350, and also to cool the Arctic, to keep the methane in place, the sea ice in place, try to restore some stability to the jet streams. And with Trump, you know, that really harms, say, leg one of the barstool, the slashing emissions. And, you know, it certainly means maybe we have to go whole hog on leg two and three. But I can't see how we can let one person, no matter who they are, destroy the work of hundreds of other countries. I mean, we have 195 countries, you know, in the Paris Agreement, and we're going to say one guy in one country, albeit they have a huge influence, can take down global efforts at retooling to renewables and addressing climate change. Yeah, it really doesn't make sense.
Well, they say it's always darkest just before the dawn, and I trust we'll live long enough to see the dawn. We've been talking with a regular and quite popular guest here on Radio EcoShock in Canada. Paul Beckwith is a climate scientist at the University of Ottawa. He has thousands of followers on his Twitter feed, Facebook page, and YouTube channel. You can get your own education in climate science practically just from Paul's videos. They're available from his website as well at paulbeckwith.net. It's a place to be for science before it's news, I think. Paul, thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.